So you don't think the Sophists are teachers either?
I can't say, Socrates. I'm in the same condition as most people. Sometimes I think they are, sometimes not.
Do you know that it isn't only you and other public men who waver on whether this can be taught? The poet Theognis says exactly the same thing.
In which verses?
In the Elegies, where he says, "Eat and drink with such men, sit among them and please those whose power is great. For from good men you'll learn good things, but if you mix with bad ones, you'll destroy even the sense you have." You see that here he speaks as though virtue can be taught.
So it seems.
But elsewhere, shifting his ground slightly, he says, "If understanding could be made and put into a man, then those who could do this would earn many great rewards, and never would a good father's son turn out bad, persuaded by wise words. But teaching will never turn a bad man good." Do you notice that he's contradicting himself on the very same subject?
It does seem so.
Can you name any other subject where the men who claim to be teachers of it are not only unacknowledged as teachers of others, but not even admitted to understand the thing themselves? Indeed, are said to be poor at the very thing they claim to teach. While the ones who are acknowledged to be fine and good men say at one time that it can be taught and at another that it can't. Would you say people so confused about anything are, in any proper sense, teachers of it?
No, by Zeus, I would not.
Then if neither the Sophists nor the men acknowledged to be fine and good are teachers of the subject, clearly no one else could be either.
I don't think so.
And if there are no teachers, there are no students either.
I think that follows, as you say.
And we've agreed that where there are neither teachers nor students of a thing, that thing cannot be taught.
We have agreed to that.
So virtue turns out nowhere to have teachers.
That's so.
And if it has no teachers, it has no students.
It appears so.
Then virtue could not be something taught.
It doesn't seem so, if we've examined this correctly. And so I find myself wondering, Socrates, whether there really are good men at all, or what manner of coming to be there could be for those who do become good.
It looks, Menno, as though you and I are rather worthless fellows. Gorgias hasn't educated you well enough, nor Prodicus me. So we'd better pay the closest attention to ourselves and look for someone who can make us better in some way or other. I say this with an eye on the inquiry we've just made. How ridiculously it escaped us that it isn't only under the guidance of knowledge that people act rightly and well, which is perhaps why we're missing how it is that good men come to be.
What do you mean by that, Socrates?
Like this, that good men must be beneficial. We were right to agree that this can't be otherwise, weren't we?
Yes.
And that they'll be beneficial if they guide our affairs rightly. That, too, we agreed to soundly enough.
Yes.
But that one cannot guide rightly unless one has understanding. In agreeing to that, it looks as though we agreed wrongly.
What do you mean, that we were right just now?
I'll explain. If a man knows the road to Larissa, or wherever else you like, and walks it and guides others, wouldn't he guide them rightly and well?
Certainly.
But what about someone who has a correct opinion about which road it is, but has never gone there and doesn't actually know it? Wouldn't he too guide correctly?
Certainly.
And as long as he holds a true opinion about the very thing the other man knows, he'll be just as good a guide, thinking truly though without understanding, as the man who does understand.
Just as good.
So true opinion is no worse a guide to correct action than knowledge. And this is exactly what we passed over a moment ago in examining what sort of thing virtue is, when we said that only understanding guides right action. It turns out true opinion does the same.
So it seems.
Then right opinion is no less beneficial than knowledge.
Except in this respect, Socrates, the man with knowledge will always hit the mark, while the man with right opinion will hit it sometimes and miss it other times.
What do you mean? Won't the man who always holds right opinion always hit the mark, so long as his opinions remain right?
That does seem necessary, and so I'm puzzled, Socrates, given that this is so, why knowledge is held in so much higher honor than right opinion, and why the two are different at all.
Do you know why you're puzzled, or shall I tell you?
Please tell me.
It's because you've never paid attention to the statues of Daedalus. Perhaps you don't even have them where you come from.
What are you getting at?
That those statues, if not tied down, run off and escape, but if tied down, they stay put.
What of it?
To own one of his works unfastened isn't worth very much. It's like owning a runaway slave, since it won't stay. But fastened down, it's worth a great deal, for the workmanship is truly beautiful. And why am I saying this? Because of true opinions. True opinions, too, for as long as they stay in place, are a fine thing and accomplish nothing but good, but they're not willing to stay put for long. They run off out of a person's soul, and so they aren't worth much until someone ties them down by working out the reason why. And that tying down, my friend Menno, is recollection, as we agreed earlier. Once they're tied down, they become, first of all, knowledge and then also stable. That's exactly why knowledge is worth more than right opinion, and why knowledge differs from right opinion in being bound.
By Zeus, Socrates, it does seem to be something like that.
And yet I too am speaking not from knowledge but from guesswork. That there is some difference between right opinion and knowledge, though, is not something I'm merely guessing. If there's anything at all I'd claim to know, and I'd claim to know very few things, this would be one of the things I'd count among them.
And rightly so, Socrates.
And isn't this also right, that true opinion, guiding the performance of any action, achieves the result no worse than knowledge does?
That too seems true to me.
So right opinion is in no way inferior to knowledge, nor any less useful for action, nor is the man who has right opinion any less use than the man who has knowledge.
That's so.
And we've agreed that the good man is beneficial to us.
Yes.
Since then, men could be good and beneficial to their cities, not only through knowledge, if they were good at all, but also through right opinion. And since neither of these, neither knowledge nor true opinion, belongs to people by nature, nor is acquired, or does it seem to you that either one is present in people by nature?
Not to me.
So since they aren't there by nature, good men wouldn't be good by nature either.
Certainly not.
And since it isn't by nature, we went on to ask whether it could be taught.
Yes.
And it seemed it could be taught, if virtue is understanding.
Yes.
And if it could be taught, it would be understanding.
Certainly.
And if there were teachers, it could be taught, but if there were none, it couldn't.
So it seemed.
But we've agreed there are no teachers of it.
That's so.
Then we've agreed it can neither be taught nor is understanding.
Certainly.
But we do agree that it's something good.
Yes.
And that whatever guides rightly is both beneficial and good.
Certainly.
And that there are only these two things that guide rightly, true opinion and knowledge, which a person has when he guides rightly. Things that turn out right by some stroke of luck don't come about through human guidance, but where a human being is the guide toward what is right, these are the two things, true opinion and knowledge.
I think that's so.
Then since virtue can't be taught, it no longer follows that virtue is knowledge.
It doesn't seem so.
So of the two good and beneficial things, one has been ruled out, and knowledge cannot be the guide in political action.
I don't think so.
Then it isn't through any wisdom, nor because they were wise men, that men of this sort have guided their cities, men like Themistocles, and those Ennetus mentioned just now. That's exactly why they can't produce others like themselves, since it isn't through knowledge that they are what they are.
It does seem to be as you say, Socrates.
Then if not through knowledge, what remains is that they act through good judgment, sound as it turns out, the very thing by which statesmen keep their cities upright, being no different in their capacity for understanding from soothsayers and diviners who speak by inspiration. For these too, in their inspired state, say many true things, but know nothing of what they're saying.
That's probably how it is.
Then, Menno, wouldn't it be right to call these men divine? Men who, without possessing understanding, succeed at many great things in what they do and say.
Certainly.
So we'd be right to call divine those we just spoke of, the soothsayers and diviners, and all the poets besides. And we'd say the statesmen, no less than these, are divine and inspired, breathed into and possessed by a god, whenever they succeed in speaking of many great matters while knowing nothing of what they're saying.
Certainly.
And women too, I suppose, Menno, call good men divine, and the Spartans, when they praise a good man, say, that man is divine.
And they seem to be right, Socrates, though I suppose Ennetus here is annoyed at you for saying so.
That's no trouble to me. We can go over this again another time, Menno. But if what we've searched out and said through this whole discussion holds up, then excellence would be present neither by nature nor by teaching, but comes to whoever it comes to as a gift from the gods, without any understanding on their part, unless there's some statesman capable of making another man a statesman too. And if there is such a person, he might almost be said to stand among the living as Homer says Tiresias stood among the dead, when he says of him that he alone keeps his wits in Hades, while the rest are flitting shadows. In just the same way, a man like that would be, here among us, a true reality standing out among shadows when it comes to excellence.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it, Socrates.
Well then, from this reasoning, Menno, excellence appears to come to us as a gift from the gods, to whoever it comes to. But we'll know the clear truth of it only when, before asking in what way excellence comes to people, we first set out to inquire, all on its own, what excellence actually is. For now, though, it's time for me to be off somewhere, and you should go persuade our friend Ennetus here of these very things you've come to believe yourself, so that he's gentler for it. Because if you can persuade him, you'll be doing the Athenians a favor as well.